802-882-2703.
It's Christina
and Jen from the Shoehorn Boutique.
All those fun parties and events that you just want to get dressed up for, you can get the whole outfit at the Shoehorn Boutique from head to toe, whether you're a man or a woman. Handsome coats for men, neckties and bow ties. We also have elegant outfits with sparkly accessories, tanks and camis and leggings, slimwear. The stuff we have at the Shoehorn Boutique is going to knock your socks off. Our denim is really affordable. It feels luxurious, though. I buy my jeans at the Shoehorn Boutique. We have literally done yoga in our yoga jeans. They move with your body. You can layer them with all of your holiday sweaters. We have great denim from Levi's for men. Also, really great cozy base layers. An awesome pant from Ibex for men, but all the women are buying. So come on in to the Shoehorn Boutique for all your holiday needs, all of your gift wrapping, and we'll be your personal shoppers. In downtown Montpelier on Langdon Street.
It's time to get the story behind the story. Interviews with newsmakers, newsbreakers, and your phone calls. Radio Vermont presents The Mark Johnson Show.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the program. Thanks very much for tuning in. Boy, it is dark out there this morning. Thanks for spending part of your morning with us. Maybe, gosh forbid, we might provide a little bit of brightness, a little sunshine. Maybe you'll actually learn something today. I already have from our guests, and we haven't even started the program. Coming up in just a moment here, we're going to find out about the world of independent medical practices. And our guests are going to tell us why that's important. We learned last week when we talked with Bea Grouse, who's with the Vermont Hospital Association, that some 75% of doctors now in this state work for a hospital. We would love to take your phone calls throughout the program as well. We will take your calls at 244-1777. That's our local number in central Vermont. And you can also reach us on our toll-free lines at 877-291-8255. Coming up later on this week, tomorrow, we'll talk with the logger. Rusty DeWeese will join us to kick off the program tomorrow. And then on Wednesday, we're going to talk solar issues with Andrew Savage. Later on this week, too, we'll talk about an important reading program for children. We got a bunch of other great guests coming your way as well, too. Let me again give you the phone number, 244-1777. That's our local number in central Vermont. And you can also reach us toll-free at 877-291-8255. We begin this morning. Let's give a nice warm Radio Vermont welcome this morning to Amy Cooper. Amy is the Executive Director of Health First. And also joining us is Dr. Joe Haddock. He is on the board at Health First. And thank you both for coming in. Amy, of course, has the great misfortune of having to live on my same street. So thank you for coming in. How's it going this morning?
Oh, it's going quite well, Mark. Thank you.
Am I the worst neighbor on the street, or are there other people that are actually worse than I am?
I would say you are about the middle of the pack.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's not too bad.
That's about where I want to be in this situation. tell our listeners, Health First, what is that?
Sure. Health First is our independent physician association here in Vermont. And the mission of Health First is to protect the viability and sustainability of independent practice as a model of delivering healthcare services in the state into the future. We have about 160 different independent physician practices that are members here in the state.
Glad I just wrote down how many. Okay.
Just started. Health First was formed in 2010, actually, so a relatively young organization. But it's a way for the independent providers in Vermont to get together and work together on delivering better healthcare services, advocating for the things that they believe are important in the healthcare system. And I started as the executive director there earlier this year.
Why did it start? What was the need that was there that required it to start?
Well, you know, independent practices in the healthcare ecosystem are the little guys. We are the, you know, like the local supermarket as opposed to the big chain supermarkets. So we often don't have a voice unless we come together. The hospitals and the insurers are very, very large corporations who have a lot of voice and influence. So Health First started so that we could collectively come together and talk about issues that are important to independent providers.
Okay. So you must have seen, there must have been somebody that saw this trend happening, sort of more and more hospitals picking up doctors.
Yes. Absolutely. And the physicians in all saw that trend coming. And that's where we are a little bit right now, is we want to make sure that the patients and Vermonters know about this trend. The choice to access care through independent, small, community-based providers that are not employed by large institutions may be going away in Vermont. Here in Vermont, we have, as Bea Grau said when she was on your show, about 25% of our physicians still in independent practice. Nationally, about 60% of physicians are in independent practice. Mm. So the way the system has grown up here in Vermont, with very large interests on the institution hospital side, on the insurer side, has really squeezed out the independent providers in a way that it has not done in other parts of the country. So that's why this issue is critical. And we'd like patients to understand the critical nature of it right now.
So, Joe, why have you stayed out on your own and not joined in with the hospital?
Well, I think independent physicians are independent to a fault sometimes, but that is an attribute which allows smaller practices to customize their practice for their patients' sake and not for the organization's sake. Our own practice was owned by Kaiser for a short while. And when we left that, it was partly because we felt like Kaiser wanted us to make widgets. Everybody was the same. And I think independent practices are able to customize their care to the independent individual patient much more easily rather than be seen as putting square pegs in square holes.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about your practice.
I practice at the Thomas Denton Health Center, which is the oldest group practice in the state, begun in 1969. I've been in practice there for 36 years, since 1978. We see babies to people in hospice. We're open 7 days a week for limited hours at times. And we participate in all the medical student educational programs through the hospital with students at our office. We try to customize the care to the individual patient.
Have you had pressure either from the outside or internally, financially, to give up an independent practice?
I think we've not had direct pressure. For example, somebody coming to say, here, you're going to be out of business if you don't do this.
Joe, you better sign up now.
Right, correct. We haven't had that. However, indirectly, through reimbursement plans here in the state, independent physicians are reimbursed to a smaller degree than hospital-employed physicians for many services. In primary care, such as I do, the difference may be only 15 or 25%. Which in primary care is a lot, while in specialty practices, the difference in reimbursement to an independent physician versus a hospital-employed physician may be 300 to 500 or 600%.
Mm-hmm. What's the justification for the difference? Because a hospital has overhead. What's the argument?
Well, there are arguments that say the hospital does have overhead at providing the emergency room, specialty care that doesn't make money. There's also the argument, especially at the university hospitals at UVM and Dartmouth, that they're educating both medical students and residents and interns. That's some of their argument. I would say a lot of it is inherited change from 15 or 20 years ago that has been compounded over the years and understood and never been brought to light.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk about that same question?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that the justification is often overhead, and we have to provide teaching and academic services as well. But the difference between hospital-employed physicians and independent physicians like Joe is that for the hospitals, there's a lot of other revenue streams that support those things. There are separate payments from Medicare to support graduate medical education. There are separate facility fees charged by hospitals, which are expressly added on to pay for overhead and ER and cross-subsidization. And those facility fees are often much higher 2-3 times the actual professional fees going to the doctors. So then to also justify variations that are significant in professional fees to doctors using those same reasons, you know, the question is, where does that end?
Mm-hmm. We're talking about independent medical practices. You can join us at 244-1777, toll-free 877-291-8255. We're talking with Amy Cooper and also Joe Haddock. They're both with Health First. And again, our number is 244-1777, toll-free 877-291-8255. So is it financial reasons that most doctors are giving up their independent practice and going working for hospitals? Is it really all about money? Is that what's going on?
Yeah, well, you know, when you look at the last 5 years or so, you know, we've seen insurance premiums increasing 10% a year, on and on. We've seen hospital budgets increasing for 5-6% a year every year. And then when you look at, which I have, the payment rates over the last 4 or 5 years for independent practices from all payers, from private payers and public payers, you know, they've been flat, decreasing in some cases. If they grow at all, it's 1%. So when you have those trajectories, then financially it doesn't make sense to stay in independent practice. And I've talked to physicians. I was just at a party on Saturday night talking to, you know, an employed physician who thought about opening his own practice. And he said, I looked at the costs and I looked at what my reimbursement would be in this state. And he said, it didn't make sense. So I had to go sign up and join the hospital. And you know, he said, I'm happy for what you guys are doing. It's sad, the situation here right now. And he said, when people from the healthcare reform boards, the Green Mountain Care Board, et cetera, come and speak to us, I feel like I can't speak my mind because maybe the administrators, the people who signed my contract, won't appreciate what I have to say. Mm. And he thinks that's a sad part of all this. And so do we, which is why, you know, as independent physicians, it's sort of our responsibility here to be the voice of the physicians in the community.
Okay. So tell me, what do I and everybody listening here lose by having my doctor be employed by a hospital and not independent?
So I'll give you a couple of examples of how, you know, independent physicians are able to respond to the needs of their patients in a more personalized way. One is, for example, last week, you know, I was talking with one of our physicians in primary care practice here in Chittenden County who said, you know, I've been hearing from a lot of my patients that they'd like to do their own scheduling of appointments online through my website, through our scheduling system. So I said, hey, that's interesting. I've been hearing it a lot. I'm going to open up my scheduling system, called my IT vendor, and now has his patients being able to schedule their own appointments online. That change happened within a week. He didn't have to check with a big IT department, a compliance department, answer the question of why can't all doctors do this, et cetera. He just made the change. He's piloting it and seeing how it works for his patients. Another example is certain procedures. So take vasectomy, for an example. A procedure that can be done in an office by a community-based independent physician and is often done. And the patient comes in, sees their regular doctor in the regular office, the regular scheduling system, receptionist, nurses that he knows, comes and gets the procedures done and goes home. In a hospital-employed setting, there's often policies against having procedures like that in the office. They must be done in the operating rooms, which the hospital has open for that kind of thing. So the patient has to schedule different place, different time, different scheduling staff, different receptionist, go over to the operating room, get the procedure done. Often takes a lot longer than it would in an office-based setting. Patient gets the procedure, goes home, gets the bill. There's a bill from the doctor for his time, the professional fee, and then there's also a facility fee bill now tacked onto that as well, which patients, you know, in this era of high deductibles and copays are shouldering a lot more of. So that's another way in which care is provided differently in independent physician practices versus in hospital-employed situations.
Okay. Sounds like there's a vast difference. Sorry, just couldn't resist. So it sounds like it's more complicated in the hospital, can potentially be more expensive, too.
Mm-hmm.
How, you know, I really noticed this trend personally because I go to a cardiologist, and the cardiology practice that I went to in South Burlington, 8 or 9 cardiologists, one day I wake up, literally, boom, they've all, like, scattered to different hospitals. And that was really a lot about Medicare reimbursement rates. Is that, so what's going on with Medicare reimbursement rates that would lead a cardiology group, which looked like it was just, you know, raking in cash, to disperse?
So Medicare...
You want Joe to handle that one?
Joe, do you want to handle that one?
Knock yourself out.
I'm not familiar with the cardiology situation in particular.
Certain of the procedures that cardiologists do heretofore were reimbursed at a similar rate in both a private setting and a hospital setting. And then a couple of years ago, that changed. I don't know all the details, as I'm not a cardiologist, but the folks to whom you refer are the people to whom I refer,
right.
Patients. And all of a sudden, for example, an echocardiogram as an outpatient setting was reimbursed 20 or 30% less than the same echocardiogram, perhaps done in the same laboratory on the same patient and read by the same cardiologist, would be reimbursed in a hospital setting.
Wow. Wow. And that's true whether it's private insurance, Medicaid, or Medicare. All payers are paying this differential.
I don't think Medicaid does to the degree the others do. Most of the commercial insurers, of which we only have a couple in Vermont and one major one in Blue Cross Blue Shield, most of the commercial insurers base their reimbursement on a certain percentage based on the Medicare reimbursement. So when the Medicare differential is X, then the commercial insurer's reimbursement is some function of X.
Mm-hmm.
And so it then extrapolates to across the whole payer mix, except probably Medicaid.
If you have any questions or comments for our guests, you can join us at 244-1777 is our local number. Toll free, 877-291-8255. So it sounds, Amy, as though the trend is really going against your group here. And you know, one of the arguments that I hear on this is that it's less expensive for us, kind of big picture-wise, healthcare expense, to have doctors working for hospitals because they get paid a salary, as opposed to this sort of open-ended, you know, Joe could be making, you know, who knows, God knows how much he could be making. So what about that argument?
So what you don't hear in that argument as well is that hospital-employed physicians on salary often have volume targets of number of procedures that they have to do to get bonuses, et cetera. So there's more to it than they're on salary. The other thing is if you look at studies that have been done across the country where there are independent physician groups like ours at Health First that manage the total cost of care for their populations through capitated global budgeting payment agreements. For example, Medicare Advantage is a program like this that we don't have a lot here in Vermont, but it's about 30% nationally of the Medicare population.
Get a fixed payment for the patient.
Yep. Based on the number of patients that your primary care physicians are managing. The studies they've done have shown that the independent practices, groups like Health First that band together to manage the patients, do so at rates that are 10% below the local hospital-employed physician groups and 20% below physician groups employed by multi-hospital systems. There's a study that came out in the Journal of American Medicine, the Journal of the American Medical Association recently, that showed these results.
So why is that happening? Why is it 10 to 20% less?
Well, a lot of the, partly for the reasons that we've already talked about, where independent physicians have more flexibility to keep their office open on weekends, for example, so that patients can come in and see them instead of having to go to the ER, which then often leads to admissions, which is where most of the cost is in the medical system. when doctors work with their patients and don't have other considerations, they find ways to manage the patient's chronic illnesses, in particular diabetes, chronic heart failure, et cetera, which are diseases that can be managed outside of the hospital, but are often not, because patients don't see their doctors enough, don't have the self-management tools, et cetera. And independent physicians are historically in those situations have been able to provide those tools for self-management, et cetera, the flexibility around seeing patients in their offices instead of in higher cost settings. These are some of the things that drive the lower overall cost that these independent physicians have been managed to keep care at.
I'd imagine you're making your case to the Green Mountain Care Board.
Yes.
What's their reaction been to this, your argument?
Joe, do you want to speak? You've had more history with them than I have so far.
I think their reaction has been limited. I think, in part, the Green Mountain Care Board has a mission which is much broader than some of the things we're talking about here today. I think they're willing to listen. So far, we haven't heard much of a response. But I would say they consider that which we discuss with them. Health First does have party status with the Green Mountain Care Board to discuss these things. And Mr. Gobay, the head of the Green Mountain Care Board, recently spoke at our annual meeting quite well and was quite receptive to our opinions and our thoughts. So I think the Green Mountain Care Board has a big mission. It tries hard. I don't think we've heard a lot from them yet about this issue.
Do you think they get, though, what you're talking about, that it could actually be less expensive to do it that way?
I think some of the Green Mountain Care Board does.
Okay.
I would say, as a primary care physician, I feel well represented on the Green Mountain Care Board by Dr. Alan Ramsey. Many times in all this healthcare reform era, the people at 35,000 feet don't know what goes on in the trenches. And those in the trenches don't know much about the 35,000 feet.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I feel that we in the trenches are well represented by Dr. Ramsey with respect to primary care. I do think independent practices are represented or understood well by Mr. Gobay, as he is a private businessman running his own enterprise, much the same as I'm in charge of the Thomas Chittenden Health Center.
Right.
So I think we have an ear in each area that we're worried about in those two folks.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's been more difficult than we would have thought to get on the agenda sometimes. I think the Green Mountain Care Board, as Joe said, is dealing with hospital budgets, for example, that they're in charge of, with the insurer rates, and with a lot of the reforms that they're working on, global budgets for hospitals, bundled payments, things that are really focused on the hospital setting, because that's where most of the costs are in the system. So, you know, I think they have a lot on their plate that's not independent physicians. So that's why, another reason why we're trying to take our message to our patients and mm-hmm. let them know as well that, you know, this is an issue that you can get involved in as well. You can write your legislator. You can contact Health First, just so that the Green Mountain, our regulators, know that people in Vermont care about this type of service and delivery model and healthcare, and that we should be paying attention and asking the question of these new reforms and policies that are put in place, how does this affect independent practice? And that question has not been asked enough historically in the way that reforms have been going, in the way that, you know, market shares in the insurance market have been consolidating, et cetera. This question is not being asked enough.
Mm-hmm. If you have any comments or questions for our guests, we'd love to hear from you. 244-1777. That's our local number in Central Vermont. Toll-free 877-291-8255. We'll take a short break. We'll come back, continue our discussion. We have some folks here from Health First. It's an independent physician network. Amy Cooper is joining us, and also Dr. Joe Haddock. We'll take a quick break. Back after this.
What's the most important thing when winterizing your car or truck? Jack Castellaneta, Vice President at Formula Nissan, says tires rate right at the top.
At Formula Nissan, we have one of the best selections of tires you'll find in Vermont at competitive prices with one big difference. Our tires are installed by ASE-certified factory-trained technicians.
And that's important. Today's cars have everything from special alloy wheels to advanced suspensions that require special attention.
And we'll give you that special attention at a special price. Right now, we'll mount and balance four tires for just $49.95.
And Formula Nissan consistently ranks as the top Nissan dealer in customer satisfaction in Vermont. So why let just anyone install your tires? Get the best tires installed by the best technicians.
Save more during our winter tire sales drive. The best tires installed at a great price by the best technicians in the business. No appointment necessary, just stop in. We're on the Barry Montpelier Road next to Pizza Hut, or visit us at FormulaNissan.com. You'll love the service, you'll love the savings, and you'll love how easy it is to do business here.
Give local this holiday season by shopping downtown Montpelier, a friendly, convenient place. The perfect gift awaits everyone on your list at your favorite independent shops, like these.
Enjoy freshly baked cookies and toasty hot chocolate from Birch Grove Baking's cart on the corner of State and Elm Street. While you're there, check out their holiday menu and order your holiday pastries. Flash your flannel at the drawing board and save 20% off any one art supply Friday only. And remember, they can frame anything from posters to fishing lures. Give the gift of art and inspire the ones you love. The holidays are a great time to freshen up your pet's apparel. At Guy's Farm and Yard, they have a great selection of coats, collars, and beds for your best friend. While you're there, pick up some mug boots for yourself. Located on Berry Street in Montpelier.
Downtown Montpelier, personal service at great prices. The holidays just got easier. For all winter event listings, go to MontpelierAlive.org.
Toyota-thon is on. What's a Toyota-thon, you ask? This is Roger Williams at 802 Toyota. Toyota-thon is the biggest national sales event of the year. Come to 802 Toyota, browse through our huge inventory of new Toyota cars, trucks, vans, and SUVs, and get the biggest savings of the year, like 0% financing on 9 different models, true zero-down leases, plus up to $2,000 customer cash on select models, and they all come with no-cost maintenance included. Save an additional $750 if you or a family member is active military or you are a recent college graduate. Because we know your time is valuable, our friendly, no-pressure sales staff will help you select the perfect new Toyota for you and have you on the road quickly. We've beefed up our inventory to give you the best selection during this huge sale. We're easy to find. Just click on 802toyota.com, call 844-802-TOYOTA, or drive to exit 7 off Interstate 89. We're just minutes off the exit. 802 Toyota, driving to be Vermont's number one Toyota dealer.
RB Technologies on Route 14 East Montpelier has been creating and supporting thoughtfully designed, custom-crafted computer networks for their clients since 1997. Here's Peter Timponi from the Vermont College of Fine Arts.
Ruben and all of his crew have been working with us over the last 2.5 years. We recently had some electrical damage in the building, which took down the entire network, and they were in helping us the next day. It was a real, real pleasure working with them. It helped us out a ton. Here at Vermont College, we're a small operation. Our IT department, we only have 2 people, so it's often hard sometimes to find the right bit of knowledge that we might need. So I have actually called Ruben before and spoke with them about, you know, things that I'm trying to do, things that I'm trying to accomplish, and they've been very helpful in guiding us along the way. Friendly, courteous, knowledgeable are the first 3 words that come to my head when I think about Ruben and everyone there, and they're a great, great crew.
RB Technologies cares about their customers. Call them at 223-4448 or online at rbtechvt.com. RB Technologies, efficiency through technology.
All right, back continuing our discussion. We've been talking about independent medical practices. We've been chatting with Dr. Joe Haddock, who practices out in Williston, has for 30-plus years. And also we've been talking with Amy Cooper, who is the executive director of Health First. So, Doc, tell me, how is your practice? Give me a taste here of how your practice has changed in 30 years, the complexity of it. And I guess in particular, dealing with insurance.
Well, I would say outpatient primary care medicine is much more difficult now than when I started 35 years ago. Patients are much sicker. We take care of patients as an outpatient now who 35 years ago would already be dead. I think it's much more complicated because of that. We see many fewer patients' individual visits for one medical problem. Most people come in now, they have a sore throat, but also they may have gout, and their kid's in jail, and their daughter's pregnant, or their ulcer's acting up. So most visits now entail many more than one or two problems, whereas 35 years ago, it was usually just one or two problems.
Wow, isn't that interesting? I never would have even thought of that.
Another difficult part has been the computerization of medicine. One thing that really annoys physicians is all the paperwork. Doing your charts, doing your letters, looking up all your lab vessels. And with the advent of computerized medicine and electronic medical records and electronic billing systems, it was advertised that those things would be less onerous and take up less time. And I think almost any physician in Vermont would now tell you that the charting work takes much longer than it did before for fewer patients. Whereas you might be able to do one day's letters and charts in an hour, hour and a half in the past, now it may take 2.5 or 3 hours.
Well, I don't understand why. Because of the complexity of the diseases or something
else? Well, it's partly the complexity of the diseases, but the real main reason is all these agencies measuring things, and all the data for that has to be entered in the computer, either by the physician or by a physician employee, and it takes a lot of time. Whether it's for, we have all sorts of outfits looking at our office to see that if we're practicing well or to make sure we've got all the boxes checked on the computer, from the medical home and blueprint in Vermont or meaningful use nationally or our accountable care organizations. All those things require a lot of boxes to be checked on the computer. And that takes a lot of time. So I think all physicians complain about how much time it takes to do the administrative work entailed in taking care of patients. Mm-hmm. The patients themselves are much sicker than they used to be. And then you add on this other bureaucratic responsibility, it makes it much more difficult.
Is there any value in that information you're collecting?
Well, there's a lot of arguing about that. I'll give you my own philosophy. The electronic medical record. I was a disciple of Dr. Larry Weed, who came here in the 70s from Cleveland Clinic and invented the problem-oriented medical record. His goal for the electronic medical record was to communicate among those providing care, be they physicians, nurses, physical therapists, dieticians.
Within the team.
Correct.
Okay.
Whereas the main goal of all the electronic medical records is data mining and ease of billing Medicare and other insurances. So, whereas those two goals may be not congruent, and many times they're actually antithetical to each other.
Okay. 244-1777, toll-free 877-291-8255. One of the things that I noticed in one of the practices that actually my daughter was going to was that the doctors, and they were working for Fletcher Allen, that you got about 15 minutes a visit, if that. And I remember them specifically one time come in, which I thought was the most outrageous thing I'd ever heard, is they said, you can only talk about one problem. So, which, because there was this 15-minute limit. So, I think I picked the broadest possible problem you could have to fit everything into it. But so what do you do that? How do you deal with that at your practice? Will you take 5 hours with, or an hour with me if I need it, or what?
Based on fee-for-service system, you have to see a number of patients. You do get to charge a little more for seeing numerous problems in the setting of one visit.
So they should have been asking me if I had more problems. I'd have gotten more money.
Well, not that much more.
Okay.
I would think that was more idiosyncratic to that physician. I have many physician colleagues that work for UVM, used to be Fletcher Allen, who would not do that, even if they were advised to do so. And I think they do a fine job. One of my old colleagues at the Thomas Chittenden once said, Dr. David Park, said that no patient will ever complain that you took too long with them. However, you can't always address 20 problems in one setting.
Right.
Most patients in a primary care office will have to wait for a while, and if they've been in that practice for a long enough time, they will realize that it was sometime in the past that they were the one that was delaying everybody else.
Right.
So at our office, we tell them, bring a book and we'll get to you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you'll take the time that you need, or are you on a schedule? How do you do it?
I'm a bit of a pariah, maybe. I don't really like schedules much. I kind of like chaos a little better. It can't be too chaotic. But for most primary care physicians, I think they try to talk with the patient about whatever is bothering them at visit. They may have to prioritize it. So let's say somebody comes in with chest pain and a hangnail. You don't pay much attention to the hangnail.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. Did the doctors that you know, your friends, do they feel if they work for a hospital that they've got to be running people through?
I don't think it's quite to that degree. I think they are measured and they are observed for how many patients they see. But I don't think it's to that degree that you mentioned here.
Mm-hmm.
I will say when we worked for Kaiser, we were expected to see 32 patients a week, plus or minus one. You worked so many hours a week, you never varied it. And that did not allow for individualization of care to patients. And okay. I don't think the physicians I know who work for the hospital are under the gun that much.
32, I mean, you know, I'm not a doctor, obviously, but that doesn't sound too onerous.
32 hours a week.
As you said, 32 patients.
Oh, I misspoke. 32 hours a week of scheduled patients.
Okay. All right. Okay.
And one thing I think this is an issue raised, Mark, that's talked about a lot in the medical community and among patients, of course. And one thing in primary care that we're trying to do, and certainly have had more success with, some success with in this state, is making a more of a team-based approach to care so that all problems don't come directly to the primary care physician, like the hangnail, for example. You know, even at Joe's practice, they have a lot more physician's assistants and nurse practitioners on staff than they did 30 years ago. And so there are special... even special sorts of visits that get reimbursed by Medicare differently. One is the annual wellness visit, which are specifically designed for patients to talk about their history and different problems. Mm-hmm. And so utilizing those tools that have been developed and that do have reimbursement attached with them is something that, you know, our group is moving towards, and all physicians really are moving towards a more team-based approach to primary care.
Mm-hmm. Do the hospitals make money? Let me see how I can phrase this. If 75% of the doctors are working for hospitals, are the hospitals making money above and beyond what it costs for the doctor? I mean, are doctors profit centers if they're hired?
Yes, in that if the hospital owns more physicians and physician practices, then when they employ the physicians, they're put on salary. But the hospital continues each year to raise their budgets, you know, as I said, 5%, 6%, 4% last year. But there's not a subsequent increase in physician salary necessarily that's at the same level. So the hospitals, by buying more physicians, are able to increase their revenues.
Okay. I don't think I phrased that right. Because there are procedures that need to get done. So let's say you had Joe recommending a procedure that gets done at the hospital as opposed to me, the doctor working at the hospital. Is there any upside for the hospital to have me employed? They can charge, you know, a little bit more than having just charging for the procedure that Joe has sent somebody in for. Did that make sense? Joe, did you understand that?
Yes, I think, just speaking of primary care, if I'm making X number of dollars in my practice now and went to work for a hospital where the reimbursement for my service would be X plus 20%, then there would be a net gain there.
Okay.
Yes.
And there would also be the ability to charge facility fees.
Okay.
Even though Joe is practicing in the same building that he was before his practice was owned by the hospital. Now, since he's under the same tax ID billing number as a hospital, then they can charge facility fees additionally to the payers. So it's the same service being provided, but it's not just a professional fee that is higher. It's also tagging on a facility fee. So it's an immediate way for hospitals to increase revenue by employing physicians.
Gotcha. Okay. Have you been ever asked, Joe, to join a group, a hospital?
Well, in 1993, our private practice was based on an old business model where you had to buy into the practice. And in the early 90s, no longer was anybody buying into primary care. So we had an old business model where goodwill was worth something in primary care, and then all of a sudden it wasn't. So our practice did entertain bids from what was then Community Health Plan. You remember CHP in Vermont?
Yeah.
And the University Health Center, which was the practice model of the medical center hospital before there was Fletcher Allen.
Right.
And we entertained bids from both. It was our sense that we could maintain our autonomy a little more with Community Health Plan, which may or may not have been correct. Community Health Plan was bought by Kaiser, and then our autonomy was not recognized much. But after 4 years in that system, we were able to get our practice back without any payment of goodwill.
Mm-hmm.
So in that setting, we were courted a little bit by what was then UHC, but not by the hospital per se.
Okay. All right. Let me have you put these headphones on here. 244-1777 is our local number. Toll free 877-291-8255. Let's head to Essex. Frank, good morning.
Good morning.
How's it going?
I was calling inquire of your guest if he has heard of the Utah program where their reason for putting the extra burden of reporting onto their doctors was that they use the data to establish norms and establish improved allocation of medical resources. And they reported, and it's been in the New York Times and several many medical and other journals, that by doing that, they were able to reduce medical costs and medical outcomes both, reducing medical costs sometimes by 30% or more. I wondered if you could comment on that.
Mm, okay. All right.
I don't have any primary knowledge of that. I have read about it. I think any time data is gathered and physicians are shown that they are outliers or not efficient, that the onus is on those physicians to improve. There may be a financial reward for that, but in many instances, it's just recognition that one is an outlier that then causes that physician to improve. But I have read about that, and I understand it.
And I think it's important to just point out here, too, that Joe and most of the physicians in our Health First Network are participating in these ACO programs, which use data from the EMRs to give results back to the doctors on how they're managing their patients, to identify outliers, as Joe said. And so there is value in that, and we are supportive and participating in those programs as well. But with all of this data gathering, you have to look both at the burden that it puts on physicians in addition to the value that you get out of it. And we just want to make sure that both sides are thought about in the equation.
244-1777, toll-free 877-291-8255. Let's go to Randolph Center. Mary, good morning.
Good morning, Mark. Good morning, Doctor, and your other guest. It's so refreshing to hear a doctor's opinions and thoughts and how this impacts his doctoring each day. It's just really refreshing. We don't hear from the doctors enough, so I appreciate him being on here and having him. And he talked about how 30 or 35 years ago, you know, treating the different ailments that people would come in with, you know, you have to look back on what we were eating and how we were functioning 30-some years ago. It's much different than today. Food has changed, and I think that's one of the reasons that people are sicker. The other thing I wanted to say, too, that, you know, I'm sorry for doctors that they have so much paperwork and so many distractions that are taken away from the time that they could spend with their patients and helping them and being a healer. It's a very special calling, so I appreciate the doctors that are out there and that are healers. I think having a private practice does allow that, you know, that ability to be a healer and do their own thing to a degree, of course. Thinking back, I'm 60 years old now, and when I was a little girl, we had a doctor that, you know, they still made house calls. And when Dr. Gove, we'd go to his office, believe it or not, it was $7 to see him. And we didn't have insurance. I'm not sure when insurance came along, but, you know, we would just go when we needed. Or my mom tells a story of being in the office. I lived on the beach, and when people would come in to Dr. Gove, sometimes he would tell the guy, are the blues running? Just drop me off a couple fish. And that's how he would be paid for some of his services. So those are the good old days. They're long gone. But anyway, good to hear from you, Doctor.
I'm just dying to ask, have you ever taken any payment other than cash? And what? Give me the wildest one you have.
Well, I still have a couple people that give me a pickup truck of hay for a physical each year, as I raise sheep on the side. We still make a fair number of house calls in for patients who are homebound. You can't do as much intense care at home as you can in your office, for example, testing and cardiograms and things. But one never knows a patient as well until the physician or nurse practitioner or whoever sees them in their home setting to see what they have to deal with in their life.
I got an email question right here on topic of this. Have you ever considered having what are called a concierge practice, where somebody like me would pay you a flat amount of money to be kind of available, shall we say?
I've been asked, and I would not consider it.
Why?
I think it pre-selects for a group of patients that decreases the heterogeneity of your patient population, increases the homogeneity of that group. And for me personally, I have lots of patients I've cared for 35 years, have a long-term relationship, that we wouldn't be able to afford that.
Okay. Okay, so what are you saying? You'd have a self-selected group of elitists. Is that what I'm hearing? Well, I didn't quite understand your answer.
I didn't say elitists. I said a group of patients.
Okay. Who are slightly more affluent than you. So why is it important that you have a wide mix of people in your practice?
Well, I think that's why you go into primary care. We take care of cradle to grave, poor to rich, of means and not of means. And the greatest satisfaction frequently is, especially at this point in my career, taking care of older patients that have been through a lot of misery. You go through them with them, you go through it with them somewhat vicariously. And that's a fulfillment you don't necessarily get otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Are there a lot of people in your organization that are considering that same thing or not?
We have physicians that practice concierge medicine and Health First right now. It's a very small percentage of our membership right now, but it's another way of delivering care that is free from the constraints and a lot of the bureaucracy and everything else that gets put in the middle of patients and their doctors right now, given the insurance situation. So from Health First perspective, we're certainly inclusive of all kinds of models of delivering care, care, including that one.
We only have a couple of minutes left here. I'd like to have both of you talk about the future here and what you see and what you fear. I mean, there's a lot of discussion. Got a big rollout that's going to happen next month, beginning of this real discussion about a single-payer system. So looking at this from the perspective of the independent doctors, Amy, what's the fear? What are the concerns in, as you look at next couple of years here in Vermont?
Well, you know, there's two separate issues, really, that often get mashed into one. One is sort of how you finance healthcare, single payer, and the other is your delivery system, how you deliver healthcare. And what we're really concerned about is that not only we're really concerned about going to a single provider system, where in the delivery system, there's only one way that you can receive care, and that's through a hospital-based setting. That's what we're concerned about. So, you know, the financing of care, while there is, you know, interplays between those two, it's really a separate discussion than the delivery system and how care is delivered. And so we want to keep everyone's focus on the delivery system and ensuring that there's a diversity of choices for patients, and that the way we're going, you know, has put the squeeze on independent practices. As I mentioned, here in Vermont, only a quarter left in independent practice versus a much higher percentage nationally. So as we move forward with reforms, we need to think about the impact that changes we make will have on independent providers in particular. And we're looking at talking with legislators about, you know, there could be a number of solutions that we don't have pinned down what the right one is yet, but ways to support independent practices in Vermont. And we want to take proactive steps in order to do that. And we feel like the time to do that is now, because the way things have been going, independent practices have gotten squeezed out of the system.
It sounds like, though, there's an opportunity in this healthcare reform that you could get the reimbursement rates closer here in the state than what's going on.
Yes. And, you know, there's equal pay for equal work is, you know, an idea that a lot of Vermonters care about and applied in other settings, you know, and that's something that we're exploring. You know, should physicians, regardless of whether they're employed by hospitals who have more bargaining power with insurers or whether they're the small guys and employed independently, should they be should the state step in and say, we want to reward equal pay for equal work? And that would certainly throw a lifeline to independent practices going forward. So, you know, there's a number of ways that we could approach this situation, and we're figuring out sort of the best one. But we'd like to get, what we really want to do is raise Vermonters' awareness that this is a critical issue, have them talk to their legislators about the care they receive from independent practices, so that we can all start to focus on this as an issue.
Mm-hmm. Tell me what your biggest fear is looking down the road here.
I'd like to make one point first, if I could.
Yeah.
We independent physicians throughout the state are looking to get a fair shake with respect to our reimbursement. Most of us trained at Fletcher Allen or UVM or at Dartmouth, and we're not anti the hospitals. We recognize that those are both excellent primary or excellent tertiary academic centers, and we're lucky to have UVM here in Vermont. And all of us are here in part because it is here. So we're not out to be against Fletcher Allen or UVM. We would just like to be treated fairly on the reimbursement scale. Second point I would like to make, my fear is primary care is in trouble. I think the reimbursement, regardless of what the mechanism is, needs to realize, the reimbursement system needs to realize that primary care will no longer exist unless some dramatic changes are made. We used to call physicians who picked their specialty based on how much they could make, we used to call them greedy, and now you might call them fiscally responsible, because the cost of medical school is so high, and folks in Chittenden County, they may have $300,000 in debt, and a house may cost $200,000 or $300,000. So to expect someone to go into primary care at its current level of reimbursement with those already debts makes it difficult. So regardless of the payment system, single payer, multi-payer, whatever, primary care needs to be recognized and reimbursed in a better manner to ensure its preservation.
Did you come out of medical school with any debt?
Yes.
How much, could you mind telling me?
Well, this was a lot of debt for 1972. I was $60,000 in debt.
Okay. Yeah, that is, I mean, back then, that was real money back then. Do you take new patients today, or is your practice closed?
Our whole practice is open to new patients of any insurance. At this stage of my career, I still take new patients, but I wonder if I should be doing so at 68 because I don't know how long I'll be around for them to see. But personally, I take patients referred by other physicians or family members of existing patients, and folks in our office all take new patients.
Thank you both for coming in. I appreciate it very much. Dr. Joe Haddock and also Amy Cooper, both with Health First, and website, if people wanted to get more info, would be what, Amy?
Our website is vthealthfirst1st.org.
All right, that's going to wrap things up for hour number one. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Keep your dial right here. We'll take your calls the rest of the way. This is FM 96.1 WDEV Warren, broadcasting from the top of Sugar Bush, and AM 550 WDEV Waterbury, Montpelier. News is coming your way next.